This is Talk of the Nation Science Friday. I'm Ira Flatow. A little bit later, we'll be talking about a man who regained his sight after being blind for 40 years. But first, there's good news again about aging. If you're a yeast, that is. Back in May, David Sinclair at Harvard published a paper in Nature identifying a yeast longevity gene. Now, that's a gene that, when triggered by a reduction in available food, activates another gene that regulates aging. And the whole thing extends the lifespan of yeast by as much as 70%. Well, Sinclair and his colleagues from Harvard and the biotech firm BioMol are back at it again, this time with news published this week online in the journal Nature. They've identified several compounds in plants that extend the life of yeast by triggering that aging regulator gene, but without the need for that low-cal starvation sort of diet. And you wine drinkers, listen up, because the compound that gave the biggest boost to that aging regulator gene is the one found in red wine. Now, keep in mind, we're talking about yeast here, but many scientists think that when it comes to the fundamentals of aging at the cellular level, we humans might not be so different from yeast. So we'll be talking about what we can learn from yeast about how humans age and how research might help us understand how to slow down that process. If you'd like to join our conversation, give us a call. Our number, 1-800-989-8255, 1-800-989-TALK. As we open our bottle of Shiraz, let me introduce David Sinclair, lead author of the Nature paper and an assistant professor of pathology at Harvard Med School. He joins us today from the campus. Welcome back to the program, Dr. Sinclair.
Thanks very much, Ira. It's great to be here.
Thank you. Last time we talked about this phenomena on the program, that calorie restriction had been shown to slow aging and extend lifespan in a number of organisms, correct?
Yes, that's true. And we are reporting about yeast now. And, you know, I'll freely admit yeast are very simple organisms. But like you say, there's a scientific basis for at least hoping that one day what we're learning here in the yeast and some other simple organisms will maybe one day hold true for humans.
Hmm. Tell us about this molecule in wine that you found in this latest research. How does that affect the age of the yeast?
Can I just put this whole study in context?
Please.
If you let me. So, sure. So we have to go back 70 years ago. This is when a guy called McKay and his colleagues first found that rats lived longer when they were given a very low-calorie diet. So let's fast forward now to the 1990s when a number of breakaway labs from the field of aging started finding that single genes could actually control the pace of aging, and this was really quite a shock for the field. And I was just a young guy in those days, a very curious observer, and that was what made me get into this field, because I thought, well, if single genes can control the pace of aging, maybe we could find small molecules that could do the same. And wouldn't that just be too good to be true to be able to control aging with a simple drug?
Mm-hmm. And so take us now to how the yeast is affected by the molecule in wine.
Sure. So it's rather complicated, but let me put it in a nutshell. There are these enzymes or proteins in all life forms, plants, yeast, even humans, that are called collectively the sirtuins. So these sirtuins, we believe, act as guardians of the cell. What they do is they take cues of stress, so any time the cell is starved or under some other type of biological stress, what they do is they switch on. And the consequence of that is that they tell other proteins in the cell to be a bit better at protecting the cell and keeping that cell alive. So really, this is how we believe calorie restriction works. You have a stress on the organism, the sirtuin in the cells becomes more active and tells the cell to defend itself against that stress. And the consequence of that, we think, is longer life.
Mm-hmm. And so you discovered that you could turn on the gene in the cell by giving them red wine, or what's found in the red wine?
Yeah, well, this was done actually looking at the enzyme rather than the gene. So that the gene in yeast is called SIR2, and it makes a protein that is this guardian. And the way this project began was really the people at BioMol Laboratories started looking at compounds that could activate this enzyme called SIR2. Actually, I should clarify that. They actually worked with the human enzyme, which is called SIRT1. So really, as a As a collaborative group, we've gone for broke here. We decided, well, let's just look for effects on the human enzyme first, and then let's come back to yeast and test if it's true. So what Biomol found was that after screening thousands upon thousands of random natural compounds, they found two structurally related compounds that managed to make this enzyme, this SERT1 in human cells, work actually 10 times faster than it normally would. And that was the first real surprise of this study among many.
Mm-hmm. And the substance that's in the red wine, does it have to be in red wine? Could it be in red grape juice? Could it be another alcohol? I mean, where else could you find it?
So the substance, the name of the substance is resveratrol. And it's really, you must admit, hard to pronounce at first. You get used to it, but we're thinking of renaming it Reversitrol. It's much, much more appropriate. But this resveratrol is found certainly most abundantly in red wine. And the reason that is, as opposed to things like white wine, is that part of the process of making wine, red wine, involves using the skins where there's a lot of this compound. Mm-hmm. And also the bottling process is great because we find that the resveratrol is rather unstable, and keeping it in a bottle away from the air is rather protective. But you can find it in things like peanuts, in trace amounts, in mulberries, and even grape juice.
But not as great quantities as in the red wine.
Nothing beats a glass of red wine.
I'll drink to that. 1-800-989-8255 is our number. 1-800-989-TALK. Talking about it's actually a good idea to turn it around, reverse the troll to resveratrol. I guess you'll have to file that away someplace. What's the next step? So, of course, everybody's going to say, well, you did it in the yeast. Great for the yeast. They're living 70 times longer. What do we do for us, you know?
Yeah. Well, if you look ahead to the future, really we have one of two paths here. We could be completely wrong, and you may never hear from me again.
I doubt that's
feasible. Yeah. But let's, for argument's sake, say that we're right. And when I say we, I mean as a field, that the people who believe in the sirtuins are right. Okay, so and that's a big if, but let's just entertain that possibility because it's pretty exciting. What we would have is molecules that we could first test in mice, and actually we've started looking into the possibility of testing these in mice next year. But down the road, what we hope is if the mouse tests are successful, we will be doing human trials, not just on normal people and aging. Certainly that would take many years to prove. But the first test would be to see if this molecule can help protect against other diseases, mm-hmm. Things like Alzheimer's, even a stroke. There's good reason to believe that this molecule could help brain cells survive the starvation of oxygen during a stroke and really alleviate these very sudden chronic diseases.
What's to stop a health food company or some, you know, herbal people from now marketing resveratrol just as a tablet in its own form?
Absolutely nothing, as far as I'm aware. And I can say that with a lot of authority, because if you go on the web, you can already find people selling this molecule in tablet form. And there's a word of caution. I should mention here that people down at Biomol have ordered some of these capsules just to test to see if they're active, and they came up completely inactive. And this fits with what we've found with this molecule, that it's rather unstable. And for us in the lab, we have to use it within a few days, otherwise most of its activity has gone.
No kidding.
But that leads me to one important point, and that is that looking ahead into the future, we've begun in collaboration with Biomol to put a bunch of chemists on this project to try and improve upon resveratrol and these other molecules we've found. We've already had some success in that area in making molecules that are more stable and even more active.
What if you froze the tablets or something?
You know, we've tried everything. It's really tough, but probably the simplest thing is to just modify it slightly and improve upon nature.
And wait for your product to hit the market. Okay, 1-800-989-8255. Let's go to the phones to Shelley in San Francisco. Hi, Shelley.
Hello. My question is, my understanding of the aging process is based on telomeres, which guide the aging process, and that my understanding is that the, you know, death of the cell is based on the telomeres breaking off, and when the telomeres have completely disintegrated, the cell dies. And what does this enzyme have to do? Does it have any effect on the telomeres?
Good question. Dr. Sinclair, can you tell people what the telomeres are in a nutshell?
Yeah, so telomeres have been extensively studied, particularly over the past 10 years. They're the ends of our chromosomes. People often equate them to these little caps at the end of our shoelaces that when they fall off, you know, you get fraying of the shoelace. So this is kind of like what is thought to happen as we age, that the ends of our chromosomes, the DNA molecules at the end, get shorter and shorter until they get so short that the cell cannot survive, and for the most part dies. But if the cells do break through this process, you can get cancer. And what's really become clear is that telomeres serve in humans to prevent cells from becoming cancerous. What's much less clear is whether the telomeres have a direct role in aging. But actually, what's an important point in this work is that we're not challenging any theory of aging. In fact, the causes of aging are probably many. What we are saying, and I speak for the field, I believe, is that these sirtuins are the guardians or the directors of these processes that are, as it were, downstream. So what we're talking about is, instead of the causes of aging, which might include telomeres and DNA damage, all sorts of other things people have theorized for many years what the causes of aging are. So we're not actually studying the causes of aging. What we're studying are the master, as it were, regulators mm-hmm. of the aging process. And the great thing about what we're working on is that we may not ever need to know the actual causes of aging to be able to intervene in the process. We just need to target these guardians of the cell.
The fact that you're working with a commercial product here, does that in any way limit what you can tell us about your research, for fear that you might be helping competitors out?
Oh, of course. This has really been a wake-up call to me. I've been involved in just academic research my whole life, and I am just learning very rapidly how to deal with things like patents, secrecy, competition, a lot of potential money to be made here. And we have collaborators that are very interested in making money out of this. Having said that, my reward really is not the money, but coming on the radio and talking to people about it.
You know, because that's a topic. That's a topic of concern of whether what you publish can be complete or whatever, since you're working probably with creating a product that would be...
Yeah.
Make a lot of money for, but this is, you know, it's the fountain of youth sort of yeah. product here.
Well, that's very true. But I think what I can demonstrate is that we rushed our work to publication as soon as we could, and the people down at BioMol were very good about that. They allowed me to further my career, and certainly the people in my lab to publish, which is really our currency. And but from now on, when we start making these drugs, that's when we really have to keep a little bit more tight-lipped about it.
I'm sorry. Maybe you won't be able to come on Science Friday and talk anymore. That'd be terrible.
I'm sure there'll be plenty to talk about.
All right. Well, let us know when you're getting closer, you know, to having a product, and we'll have you come back and talk about it. You know, the other thing about, we heard about the red wine is that it's good for your heart, right? That was the first kind of thing we heard about, resveratrol. Is there any connection here with the heart and longevity, or is it just something that's an elixir that might help a lot of different things?
Well, if you go back to these rat studies where the animals are calorie restricted, they're protected against pretty much all of the diseases associated with old age. So that includes heart disease, osteoporosis, and even cancer. This is the amazing thing about
wow.
calorie restriction.
Wow.
I mean, how can one treatment protect you against all these diseases? And so if there's an underlying mechanism, we believe we can make molecules that can do the same. In terms of the heart disease, that would be one prediction. If we're right about this, we would have predicted that a molecule like resveratrol would protect the heart. And so that actually gives us a bit more confidence that we're onto the right thing.
Dr. Sinclair, thanks for joining us, and good luck to you.
Thank you.
David Sinclair is the lead author of the Nature paper and assistant professor of pathology at Harvard Med School. He talked to us about this interesting new resveratrol. Well, I'm sure we'll be seeing it on the shelves sometime. We're going to take a quick break and come back and talk lots more. Change subjects. Talk about a man who lost his sight for 40 years and what it's like to regain it. Stay with us. We'll be right back. I'm Ira Flatow, and this is Talk of the Nation Science Friday from NPR News.